We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from the Cambridge News, read by Susan Ray.
A man had to be removed from the World Naked Bike Ride event in Canterbury after becoming aroused on the start line. An organiser said, "We do everything above board, and we make sure anything like that is immediately stamped on."
It'll be fine, they can edit the long pause. Oh, thanks to Ross Cunnington for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Miles Jupp. And opposite them on my left, Helen Zaltzman and Susan Kalman. Jeremy, who found themselves being left in a church this week?
Oh, OK. So, it's the Labour leadership. I have to declare an interest because Jeremy Corbyn is a very old friend of mine and a very, very dear and marvellous man. It was agreed on social media that he'd done best because he said passionate things articulately. The other three were sort of much of a muchness, but it was considered that the star turn was Liz Kendall. She's the one who hasn't got any baggage. She has a peculiar definition of baggage, I think. I think when she gets off a plane, she retrieves her suitcase from the Experience Reclaim carousel. But she also was the star because she trumped Andy Burnham, because he said, he was talking about the internal structures of the party and the role of leader, and he said, the party comes first, meaning the party is more important than any one individual. But she slipped in, nay, the country comes first. Nay. Well, actually, Liz, actually, I think you'll find the future of human life on the planet comes first, Liz. Actually, nay. But she's the one that Conservatives fear most, because she's the one most likely to end up running their party. So they're all scared motionless by that. But, yes, she's the one that appears to have been the darling of the right-wing media. And Jeremy Corbyn mentioned Iraq, and everyone in the media went, oh, do you have to? There was a post-match comment thing, and there were three journos there, and the middle one, who was from the New Statesman, said, I'm bored with Iraq. I thought, yeah, they're pretty fed up with us, to be honest. But so we're not allowed to talk about that anymore, despite the fact that it brought chaos to the Middle East and spawned ISIS and ISIL, which is the threat we face at the moment. But, yeah, so my favourite was Jeremy Corbyn, because he's the only other person in the media to retrieve the name Jeremy from the realms of arsedom. It's just me and him. It's just me and him.
But I feel a bit sorry for Corbyn. He always looks like the only lecturer who's turned up to a university house party. Do you know what I mean?
He's got like that. He's fantastic. He's got absolutely no self-importance. He's got much better as an orator, but when I first saw him speak, it was in O'Connell Street in Dublin in 1989. The Guildford Four had just been released. The crowd was electric and, you know, the Guildford Four were sort of coming on and thanking them for their support and everything. And Jeremy stood up to spit. And towards the end of his speech, he said, and that is why capital punishment... What? I'm sorry. Oh. Could the parents of Declan please go to the lost children area? Must never return to these islands.
But it's odd that we've got to a point where the inclusion of a left-wing MP in the Labour leadership race is treated as an anomaly. I mean, it's...
Yes, appalling. He's some kind of socialist. Unlike these capitalist socialists that we've come to know and love.
But imagine that in the Conservative Party. You're sure you want him to be a leader? I hear he might be a bit of a Tory.
I mean, it's... But he was say, well, first of all, Liz Kendall coined the brilliant catchphrase, hang on, Andy, which I don't know if it'll catch on as much as I agree with Nick, but she tried her best. Because Andy talked quite a lot. But it was a strange debate, if you watched it, because it was held in a church. There was very few people in the audience. It was echoey. It was like the aftermath of a zombie apocalypse. And they were the last people left voting for who would lead them. Leading to the game I played with myself, which was which one of them would I want to reproduce with?
Ah. What was the answer?
Andy, as long as he didn't talk over it.
See, I play the games, but I turned it into a drinking game. So I had a shot every time somebody said working mum, immigration or Westminster bubble, and I don't remember anything after the first 2 minutes.
The thing that's come out of this whole Labour leadership campaign, I think, is Ipsos Mori did an opinion poll recently amongst Labour supporters about who they wanted to be the next leader of the Labour Party, and 6% of Labour supporters wanted Stuart Lewis to be the next leader of the Labour Party. Stuart Lewis was a fake name they put in to see if anyone was paying attention. Which I think tells you that even Labour supporters really can't be bothered any longer.
I like the fact that Liz Kendall said she won't always say what's comfortable for the Labour Party. I thought, well, that hardly singles you out, frankly. The only people saying anything nice to Labour are stonemasons angling for a second commission. So.
Did you watch it, Matt?
I watched it, yeah. I thought it was all right as a one-off. You couldn't get a series out of it.
No.
They need a bit more Jeopardy out of it. But it was quite nice to see some of those people for the first time. Liz Kendall, she looked sort of quite upset a lot of the time. I thought she was going to be strident. She looked like a sort of apologetic librarian explaining that the photocopier was still broken.
I had an agent for a while who said to me once, he said, "Oh, I never really like a photo of you, Sandy. You always look like you've come second in a cookery competition."
But look, Corbyn, I played a character in a play set in the 1970s, and he was wearing exactly what Corbyn was wearing in the debate. Burnham, he sort of looks like the world's most sincere estate agent, I suppose. Just, yeah, there isn't off-street parking, but I would like there to be.
It was so boring. I have to say, by the end, I did notice that the rendering on the pillar next to the presenter needed touching up. Fan of this kind of thing?
I will not watch it, Sandy, until they replace it with gladiatorial contest. That really decides who is worthy of leadership. Just being the only one who's not dead.
But don't you think one of the problems about them looking as if they were fit to lead a party is this kind of obsession? Either they're standing behind a lectern, they were perched on, like, bar stools.
Mm. Oh, yeah, they looked like they'd lost their sort of ventriloquist dolls, didn't they? Yeah. Can you imagine a little Andy Burnham on his
leads to is incredibly bad posture, because they were on there for a good hour or so, and it leads to... Miles just sat up, bless him.
I just sat there.
It leads to very bad posture, and what that means is, by the end of it, they were all slightly slouched over, and you think, I wouldn't trust them with anything. Give them a... Make them stand.
That's why boy bands have to stand up at the key change.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. Give them a...
But then also you read into people's heights as well on the chairs. They should be on chairs that just some of them go up, some of them go down during the debate.
Organ stops up and down.
Yeah, exactly. You get a chance to be the tall one, then the little one, then the one in the middle.
They should do that according to... Because they do these things at home now where they track the popularity of the answers. They should raise them up. So that they know how they're doing as well. So if, like, if Andy was going up and we'd go, oh, we better say something quickly, and then they would just go up and down through it. Now, that would be more interesting.
But you just know the Scots would get together and press the button at the same time, make one of them crash to the floor. Hustings were held at St Nicholas Church in Nuneaton this week to help the Labour Party decide who will replace Ed Miliband as the person David Miliband slags off. Nuneaton was chosen as it was a Labour seat that was lost to the Tories, and the church was chosen as only God can help them now. In the running are Shadow Health Secretary Andy Burnham, Shadow Home Secretary Yvette Cooper, Shadow Minister for Care Liz Kendall, and Jeremy Corbyn, who can use the flash on his phone. Andy Burnham kept mentioning the Westminster bubble, which clearly isn't a thing. If it was a bubble, it would already have burst due to the sheer number of pricks. Two points to Jem. Miles, whose questioning was a bad joke?
Ah, well, there's a number of details to consider here. In this country, we have a PM...
Yes.
By the name of David. And every now and then, people want to ask him cues. Right. So there's a thing called PM cues.
Okay.
But the PM couldn't do cues recently because he went to meet some other PMs. He went to meet the PM of Italy and the PM of Belgium.
Which sounds like a cue in itself.
A cue. Well, they had much to discuss. Family news, what colours will be in this season, where Belgium is, all of these things. So if the PM can't do the PM coups, then what you're meant to have is the DPM is meant to do the PM coups.
Yes.
But there isn't one.
No.
It doesn't exist. He's ceased to exist. And
Shows our deep respect for that office, doesn't it?
Yes.
Haven't even appointed one.
We didn't really need it. And so if he can't do it, then someone else has to do it. So George Osborne, he was answering the questions. But if the PM isn't the PM at the PM coups, then they don't send out the leader of the opposition. There's a sort of, let's just all do a second 11. but then there isn't really a leader of the opposition at the moment either. So it was basically George Osborne was asked questions by a man called Hillary, which is fine. It's 2015, for heaven's sake. And so he asked him a number of questions and he answered them, and yeah, some people thought that he did quite well and some people think that he thought less well, and it really has turned into one of the great debates of our age. I hope I've made that as clear as I can,
you have,
Sandy.
But what I'm trying to get to is that possibly he made an inappropriate, humorous remark.
He made an attempt at humour, which was, he said to, your father would be very proud of you being here, but we're glad there are no... They're all Benites, but we're glad there's no Ben or something. Mm. He made basically a series of vowels and consonants come together in a way that confounded everybody that was listening.
In the context of a question about a suicide bomber.
The suicide bomber.
Oh, was it? Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, I see.
That was the problem.
So they were all very earnest questions.
He welcomed him graciously and said, your father would be very proud of you being, and everyone went, oh, this is going all right, this is okay, because it was essentially his audition piece, because at some point David's going, this was him essentially doing his X Factor, this was his big break.
So this is tight 5 minutes of stand-up?
Yes, tight five. And he started very graciously and welcomed it, and then he made the joke about Benites, and after the question about terrorism, and everyone just did what you're all doing now.
My favourite bit of all the coverage, one of the things that he claimed, which is a rather contentious statement, is that the UK pays 7% of all welfare payments in the world. The Telegraph did this brilliant way of explaining this to us. It was a rather complex graph. It was a pie chart, and all it had on it was UK 7%, rest of the world 93%. I thought, that clears it up.
Helen, that you were talking about kind of making all of this competition a bit more gladiatorial. Do you think George stripped naked? Well, to the waist.
He's not capable of nakedness. Let's just say that now so everyone feels better.
He's not capable.
No, he was born covered in 3 layers of suit. It's just safer that way.
George Osborne stood in for David Cameron at PMQs this week, tackling questions on ISIS, suicide bombers and refugees with all the aplomb of someone who's really only good at counting. George Osborne was able to tackle PMQs because Cameron is away and the restraints holding back Boris were very tightly fastened. Osborne took the reins because the office of Deputy Prime Minister is currently vacant. The cleaners are still trying to get the stench of despair out of the carpet. Many saw Osborne's PMQs as his audition for the role of Prime Minister, although many others viewed it as 43 minutes of their life they'll never get back. David Cameron has been in Europe trying to negotiate with its leaders, who are all standing in front of Greece saying, why would you want to leave? Everything's peachy. I'm summarising. 2 points to Miles. Susan, who wants a disciplined study of a lost art?
Sorry, I was thinking.
I knew it was a new look.
It's okay. So, this is about Nicky Morgan and the Conservatives' new education policy. And I don't know about you, I always get a frisson of excitement when there's a new Conservative education policy, because you never quite know what you're going to get. It's like my friends recently went away on holiday and gave me their house keys and asked me to check on their house. And I just got really excited because I could just go through everything they owned.
So, wait a minute, that was my house.
So, Nicky Morgan has announced a new policy. She's appointing someone called Tom Bennett to be a behaviour czar. Now, Tom Bennett is an ex-Soho bouncer. Hmm. Now, what this is aiming to achieve is to stamp out low-level misbehaviour by kids in class, which is things like using the mobile phone, swinging on the chairs, you know, the stuff that kids do. The stuff that kids do because they're at school, because they're kids, because then when you get a job, you're not meant to be disruptive or misbehave unless you're an MP. Now, it sounds to me like one of these, and I hate to say it, announcements the Conservative Party sometimes make to simply say they're doing something. Now, I'm willing to be proven wrong, but it seems to me that Nicky Morgan has just gone, do you know what would be amazing? We'll get, like, Ross Kemp. But we probably can't get Ross Kemp, so we'll get someone who looks like Ross Kemp to be, like, a bouncer, and that'll be amazing.
Swinging on chairs?
Yeah.
I mean, I get that can be disruptive, but if you ban it, you could possibly be removing the only physical activity secondary school pupils...
Presumably they'll put him at the school gate and just say, no trainers, you can't come in here, you're not on the list. And the fewer children there are in schools, the less disruption there will be.
What was extraordinary. He was appointed after Nicky Morgan became unpopular over education reforms. And you think, wow, being unpopular after following Michael Gove is really... I mean, that must take some effort. You wonder what she was doing. Was she trying to lure children into a gingerbread house or something? Seems extraordinary. Apparently, he's published a book, this gentleman, this bouncer. In 2010, he published a book called The Behaviour Guru. And I'm not sure if czar is a step down or a promotion. I don't know if a guru is higher.
Guru suggests using wisdom and thought and empathy, whereas czar rather suggests having Cossacks massacre your village, doesn't it?
Did you ever try that humming trick at school? Did you ever try that?
Yeah, we did.
I love that. All the kids start humming and then you suggest to the teacher maybe it's the lights and the teacher goes, turn off the lights and you'll stop humming. And they put the lights back on and you start humming again. It's huge fun, but it's also why I don't understand how glaciers work.
I think we've had too many czars now. I think we should have some sultans.
Yes.
Maybe a Kaiser.
Kaiser would be good.
Grand viziers.
Grand vizier would be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Could have the delinquency grand vizier.
It is important, though, because, I mean, the amount of... I've got lots of friends that are teachers, and the low-level disturbance eats into the day in such a way that they can't get on with the most important aspect of their job, which is trying to keep on top of crippling quantities of paperwork that has to be filled in every day and standing helplessly by while all the best resources are ploughed into the foundation of free schools.
Which don't work, Maz. Did you see? There's the most wonderful report.
Of course they do.
From Sweden, which is where the whole free school thing has come from. And Sweden has now had them for much, much longer and done a complete analysis. And the Swedish Secretary of Education said, well, we've tried it. It doesn't work. We have to stop the whole system. We're just 10 years behind. Yeah. Good luck with us.
Can't they just turn the children into academies and things like that?
And maybe I don't necessarily understand your system of education down here because it's devolved, so we've got a different system in Scotland. But everyone down here seems to spend a huge amount of time discussing what type of school it should be and what it should be called and all that. Just build good schools, let the teachers teach the children, and surely everything will get a bit better.
That sounds a lot more difficult than just changing the name.
Education Secretary Nicky Morgan has appointed teacher and behaviour expert Tom Bennett as her new school behaviour czar to tackle low-level disruption in classrooms. The minister was clear that there'll be a clampdown on fiddling with mobile phones, note-passing and making silly comments to get attention. And once the House of Commons is sorted out, she's going to move on to schools. I have to say, if I knew there was a high-ranking job going for people used to overseeing a rowdy group of delinquents, I'd have quit this gig sooner. Now... at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Miles have got 4 points, but so too have Helen and Susan. We start round two with an advertisement for an event at the Wimborne Tivoli.
50 Shades of Burlesque. Wickedly erotic. The art of burlesque is taken to the next spine-tingling level. Dressed to be dominated. We dare you to come.
Thanks to Phil Harriskin for sending us that. Helen, who's trumpeting their bid to beat the bush?
Donald Trump and Jeb Bush are standing to be the Republican candidate at next year's election in the USA, which is a dream come true for anybody who, like me, dreams of doomsday scenarios. Donald Trump has said that he thinks Jeb Bush is too unhappy to win.
Oh!
Which I'm not sure is his call to make, and I think Trump is trying to run on a platform of honesty, so he keeps going around going, my hair's real! and allegedly paid people to attend his big opening speech.
I find that hard to believe.
I know, just a lot of actors happen to be there because they're fans. And he made a great big entrance to Neil Young's Rockin' in the Free World, which caused Neil Young to say, I'm a Democrat and a Canadian, so... Please stop it.
I don't know why he chose that song, because I believe UKIP's Calypso is still available. Which, I mean, this is extraordinary, Donald Trump running. I mean, can you imagine a glorified TV personality with ridiculous hair and a general air of bewildered buffoonery doing well in politics over here? I mean, it's...
The American presidential campaign with Bush and Trump being involved is going to officially be... It's going to be next-level bonkers. It's going to be superb. George W. Bush, as we know, ex-president. So Barbara Bush has already said... That's the mother, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
There's probably been too many Bushes in the White House already. Which begs the question, how many Bushes are too many Bushes in the White House?
There are three more siblings who haven't yet had a crack at being president. So watch out. What? Yeah.
Hey, are all boys, or are there some girls? Are
there are some girls.
They're lady bushes.
But Jeb Bush said in an interview, because he's obviously being asked about his brother, said, I can't just throw my brother under the bus.
Mm. Have to throw all four siblings under the bus.
So, but and then Donald Trump wants Oprah Winfrey as his running mate, who notoriously campaigned for Barack Obama, but let's not let that
get... Yeah, but also Donald Trump famously demanded to see Barack Obama's birth certificate as proof that he was born in the United States. He asked for it for years. This is... I mean, how rich is this coming from someone who's clearly being controlled by a fluffy extraterrestrial living on top of his head? I mean, it's...
I think it's great that it's the funny names. There's going to be a funny name run up, because Jeb isn't his name. His name is John Ellis Bush, and he just thought, I'll make up a nickname for myself so I sound a bit cool. And Trump is just the perfect name for a man whose face looks like a startled anus.
Next year, we could see a race between Clinton and Bush. I mean, that is the most extraordinary thing. I bet they are so glad they went to all that trouble of fighting to become independent from Europe's wealthy ancestral elites.
That's the thing, isn't it? We don't have these sort of political dynasties. Our equivalent is, you know, acting dynasties, which are politics and the world of acting. They should be sort of meritocracies. They aren't. They're driven by dynasties. And I wonder if a way of sort of offsetting the unfairness of it is to have some sort of cultural exchange scheme where, for instance, Lawrence or Freddie Fox are sent over to America to run as Republican presidential candidates, and Jeb Bush appears as the young love interest in the next series of the Manchester gay scene drama Cucumber. wouldn't that help?
I have to say, Donald Trump, did you know this? He hosts the American version of The Apprentice. Is anybody else worried about giving nuclear launch codes to the man who coined the phrase, you're fired? I just think... He said, I've considered running before. I thought, so have many overweight people.
Trump seems... He has that thing, Trump, one of those people that has clearly been very, very successful in his field, rightly or wrongly, whatever it is, but there's never sort of a respect as a result of it. He is clearly successful in whatever it is that he does and yet remains a figure of fun. He's a bit like Jeffrey Boycott, I suppose, who was a... Susan, you know exactly who I'm talking about. Don't do that expression. And I wonder...
Is he a rugby player?
Oh, shut up.
She's just trying to upset you. Don't rise to it.
I won't. I'm sorry.
Who is he?
What? Oh, for God. This is unbelievable. This is Radio 4, for heaven's sake. It's completely misrepresentative of our culture. This must be how like Muslims felt watching Spooks. It's just...
It's Radio 4, darling, but it's not long wave. No. Former Florida Governor Jeb Bush and billionaire Donald Trump have officially announced their bids for the presidency of the United States. During a campaign speech, Jeb Bush spent an hour answering audience questions that included, what is your foreign policy, how will you stimulate the economy, and which one of them are you again? Donald Trump threw his hat into the ring on Tuesday before having to climb in and retrieve his wig. Trump announced his bid at New York's Trump Towers, which, incidentally, is the nickname for my house, 2 hours after Christmas lunch. Donald Trump isn't the first presidential candidate who's famous for doing something else. Ronald Reagan was previously an actor, and JFK is still a very busy airport. 2 points to Helen. Jeremy, which work ceiling has a cut glass accent?
This is all about privilege. Obviously, this question has been given to me as the only black woman on the panel. And it turns out that it's an advantage to be privileged.
No.
Thank God it's been proved at last, because for years, posh people have denied this, and people have said, well, actually, I saw 12 Years a Slave, and I felt jolly sorry for the slave owners, because, you know, I mean, if they had to pay all those people, that would increase their labour costs rather a lot, and I don't think the filmmakers really gave due consideration to that fact. There's always... I mean, you know, sometimes posh people are unfairly stereotyped, and maybe people are spiteful or envious or resentful, but you cannot claim that privilege is a disadvantage. I work with many people who went to Cambridge. I didn't, because the way it works is, in society, you're best off having been to Oxbridge, then Red Brick University like I did, then after that, not university at all, and then, you know, eventually Brazilian street child. There are levels of privilege, obviously. I am more privileged than some, less privileged than some others. But I didn't get into Cambridge because I went to the interview, and the minute I opened my mouth and stupid things came out, they realised I wasn't very bright. But, so that was held against me. But the point is, a dear friend of mine who went to Cambridge, he said, no, Jeremy, you're wrong about Cambridge. Actually, I think it's a disadvantage. I thought, no, any sort of an advantage is, by definition, always an advantage. As I think, no, actually, I think basketball is harder for tall people. Because, you know, people have such high expectations of you, and sometimes it would be nice to have a chance to throw the ball up instead of just leaning over and putting it in the basket.
This week, the teenagers are shunning Saturday jobs. Anybody do? Helen, did you ever have a Saturday job?
I had to go to school on a Saturday.
Did you?
Yeah. Well, someone hissed at that.
I mean, I had to go to school on a Saturday, but I was at boarding school. There was nowhere else to go. So.
I think it was because I went to the kind of school where your parents could pay to see less of you. Nailed it.
So you never had it. Susan, did you have a Saturday job?
No, I... please don't laugh. I played hockey to a very high level.
And seriously?
Yes.
What knee high?
I was a senior.
Bully off, everybody. And seriously, you played hockey?
Yes, centre striker, trials for Scotland, etc., etc. So every Saturday I was at school. I was a very, very good... I was very athletic in my younger days. So I couldn't get a job because I was playing hockey, and then on the Sunday I was working diligently at my homework because I was a diligent person. And so I didn't have time for a Saturday job.
So those two, no Saturday jobs. Any Saturday jobs on the boys'
I've
team?
I've never done any kind of job
no,
at
that's
all.
True.
I've never done a day's work in my whole life.
Did you want one, Mark?
No, I would love to have had a Saturday job, but I was playing high-level women's hockey in Scotland.
Webcam in the changing room is not the same as playing.
Vital, we're all part of the backroom team, you know, it's vital. No, I also had to go to school on Saturday because there were lessons and you had to go to them.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know quite what a diverse panel we're being tonight, but I suspect...
It's a question about privilege, so...
I suspect the 7% is somewhat overrepresented tonight.
Does this report reflect how children are too busy to have Saturday jobs due to their hockey commitments?
Because if not, why not, for heaven's sake?
I did have a job, I just remembered. I was a car park attendant for a week.
Oh. A week? A whole week?
Yeah, it was a Farnborough Air Show in about 1981. But I wasn't very good because, you know, like, you put two cars and then you leave a space for people to drive through. Mm. I didn't leave any spaces. I just got as many, as many cars in. I got so many cars into that field. It was cool. Just kept stacking them in.
Research by the government's Social Mobility and Child Poverty Commission has concluded that 70% of graduate jobs at elite companies are going to candidates who went to private or selective schools. Posh graduates are widely regarded as having more polish, which they use to keep their faces shiny and buffed, like David Cameron's. Talented working-class graduates are failing to be employed by top British companies and are being forced to revert to careers as male ballet dancers. One accountancy firm was forced to shake up its recruitment process after a manager offered a job to a graduate he met in a lift, but then found he was trying to shake hands with a mirror. Two points to Jem. Miles, why could sun cream be washing off on little swimmers?
Well, the thing about sunscreen is...
Yes.
In 1999, I rejected or neglected to follow the advice of Baz Luhrmann. And I've never worn a great deal of sunscreen. And sunscreen, it turns out, it keeps the sun off you. I don't know if you know that.
No.
But also, it adversely affects men's virility. Their, if you will, sperm goodness. This explains why I have quite a red face and five children. because I should have been covering my lower half in sun cream. Is that how it works?
Yeah.
It's not just sunscreen, in fact. Lots of various things that are all around the house now seem to have an impact on sperm goodness on... what is the right...
Bread knife.
What's the radio phrase? Bread knife.
Food processor. Juicer.
The bit I didn't understand, apparently only... Because it's not my specialist area, but... apparently only 25% of sperm has good concentration. Where do they need to concentrate? They're...
It's a long way for them. I mean, it might not be for an adult, but for something that size... It's...
But they're swimming, not doing their tax return. It can't be...
Well, they could get lost, couldn't they?
Seriously?
No.
It's a one-way tunnel. It's not got shoots off it. It's...
I've seen the diagram, and it looks like the skull of a long-horned steer. I think it's an awkward issue for men, because men find it very difficult to accept the idea that there could possibly be anything wrong with their sperm, other than the fact that it's very hard to clean off a suede jacket. It's also not very easy to count sperm, because they come out so fast.
But the extraordinary thing is, apparently it's only one in four men who have good sperm. And what are the others? Evil sperm with twirling moustaches. Tie eggs to the train tracks.
it's of really no interest to me, to be honest. But the only thing I would say is, if you are listening at home, I was researching this story. Do not, under any circumstances, Google sperm sun cream.
The thing I didn't understand, apparently cosmetics as well could be to blame. And I find that hard to believe, because they test them on rabbits all the time, and those things are breeding like...
It doesn't suit them, though, do it? When you see a rabbit with lipstick, you think, oh, she's no better than she ought to be, that one. Fur coat and no knickers.
Experts at the University of Copenhagen believe that chemicals found in sunscreen and other everyday plastics have caused a sharp decline in men's fertility. The report claims that sperm quality has dropped since the 1940s. Of course, in those days, all the sperm wore hats and stood up when they saw the egg. Professor Neil Jørgensen, associate professor at Rigshospitalet, has been carrying out a number of scientific tests on sperm, said his wife when guests asked why he'd been locked in the bathroom for 2 hours. According to the research, everyday plastics such as shower curtains are making it difficult for men to get women pregnant, although they're still less effective than condoms. Harmful chemicals known as PFCs are found in non-stick frying pans and could damage sperm. Just another in the long list of reasons not to put your penis in a frying pan. That a Dane has been so quick to discover what's been killing sperm. Normally it takes 12 episodes. At the end of round 2, the scores are Jeremy and Miles have got 8 points, but so too have Helen and Susan. We start round 3 with a headline from the Northern Echo.
National shooting event targets county's women.
And our thanks to Mark Dunwillows for sending us that. Helen, which event was a magnet for fans of democracy?
It was the 800th birthday of the Magna Carta on the 15th of June.
Yay!
Yay! And what it has shown is that hardly anybody knows what's actually in that thing because it's written in old. And, and it turns out that if you scrutinise it a bit... There's a lot of rules about where you can put fish traps. Mm. And everyone's like, oh, it's this great document that is important to the Constitution of Britain because the fish traps. And all the rules about forestry and that rule that says that if a man dies leaving a debt to a Jew, his widow doesn't have to repay it. Yeah, that's in there. And also rules about how people could not be forced to build bridges over rivers. So, a lot of important stuff
well,
that has been...
Well, I agree with that, Helen. Yes. That's quite a fundamental rule of British life, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Someone says, build a bridge, and I say, listen, the Magna Carta says I don't need to. And they go, well, just leave it then. Thanks for the chat.
So what happened was all these indignant barons who were peevish at the monarchy for being evil brought the Magna Carta to King John and made him sign it so that the monarchy would then be subject to the law, like every person and no one would be above the law. Except then the King John just went to the Pope and said, repeal this, will you? Thanks. And so the Magna Carta got thrown out almost immediately, within weeks.
Yes, and then came back again when it suited everybody. So it's been backwards and forwards.
Like Madonna.
So. Yes. I often think Magna Carta, Madonna, so similar. So
can I just clarify?
Yes.
This is a document.
Yes.
Of no legal standing.
Not really.
From several hundred years ago.
800.
That was repealed by the Pope.
Mm.
With principles set out that have no real validity. And this is what David Cameron says is the reason why we should be able to repeal the European Convention on Human Rights, because this is the basis of our constitution.
I think you've nailed it, really.
Okay,
I think,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
The only bit the only bit that's important is the bit about the king not being above the law. That's really the only bit.
Well, that's a starting point.
It's a starting point. I did like the it ordered the removal of all fish weirs from rivers, and I don't think anybody should be weighing on fish. I think that's
jellyfish. You're supposed to weigh on jellyfish. Oh, no, they're sting. You weigh on
sting,
their sting.
Oh, sting. Don't, you don't weigh on the jellyfish.
You don't weigh on it in revenge. You weigh on.
No. This week saw the 800th anniversary of everyone's favourite Carter after Jimmy and Get. The anniversary of the sealing of the Magna Carta was marked by an event in Runnymede, Surrey, which was attended by the Queen, the Prime Minister, and the Master of the Rolls, the Minister in charge of packed lunch. The document greatly influenced the American Constitution. For example, the section about the king being subject to the law rather than above is why Elvis still had to join the army. Up to date. David Cameron used the opportunity to praise the Magna Carta and criticise the European Convention on Human Rights, because we cope for 800 years with something in Latin, but we sure as hell aren't putting up with something French. So... 2 points to Helen. Miles, where are shepherds using software to recognise their flock?
Oh, this is an Israeli company has developed some facial recognition software, for reasons I know not. But it is being used, bizarrely, so far there's been uptake from churches. 30 different churches around the world are using facial recognition software as a means of monitoring the attendance of their own congregation, which I suppose is, I mean, it's very efficient where, so there's a lot of very serious, like the real big-hitting denominations, they take their regular attendance prizes really seriously. And ultimately, this is the best way of making it fair, who wins the big prize at the Christmas bazaar. So they're just, instead of going, oh, look, there's Keith, Keith's here again, you don't need to do that anymore. Keith can have a retinal scan or be photographed secretly, and you know Keith's there. And it's not without use, actually, because, for instance, a lot of schools are attached to churches now,
yes,
to faith schools, and you can't send your children to a faith school unless you go to church. But there's probably an element now where that people are taking a bit too far, and what this facial recognition software prevents is people paying other couples that look like them to go to church on their behalf as a means of ensuring their child a place at a church school. Because there's lots of precedents for this. There was a man last week who sent someone that looked a bit like him to take a paternity test, which he failed. It would have been incredibly awkward otherwise. And I'm sure we all remember the case in the late 90s of the rapper Mark Morrison, who sent a lookalike to do his community service after he'd been charged with some sort of urban affray.
I mean, how good is it? Could you not all just go to church wearing a cardboard mask looking like somebody else?
Well, one of the things you have to... If you're going to wear masks of other people to pretend to be somebody else, you have to make sure that the other dimensions fit, which is why I've got Sandy Toksvig masks. So when I go out late night, you know, in Soho, I wear the Toksvig mask, because then when they do the height measurement, they'll say, no, that definitely is Sandy Toksvig, because the height's right. So Sandy's obviously... she's slightly taller than me. She's not. So you have to, if you're going to pretend to be somebody
else.
See,
that's weird, because I went on one evening, I wanted to get into a nightclub, and I wore a Susan Kalman mask. And I wouldn't have been rumbled if they hadn't asked me to demonstrate my hockey skills. But the whole thing, if you're a Christian, for example, I don't know why I'm looking at you, Miles, but if you're a Christian, you can't really object to your church attendance being monitored. I mean, basically what God does anyway.
I mean, I when I was a little boy, I used to go to Sunday school, and I was awarded the regular attendance prize. And even at the age of 7, I thought, my dad is a clergyman. I have to come here. I have done literally nothing to deserve this. But I accepted it anyway and gave a very long speech, because that's what everyone wanted.
30 churches around the world are using something called Churchix, facial recognition software that records members' church attendance. A great development for the people who feel organised religion is just not organised enough. This technology has yet to be introduced in the UK because most vicars know both of their parishioners by name. And the system is due to be updated soon with a klaxon that will go off if the software detects Richard Dawkins. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they would care to share?
Sandy, this was sent in by Ben Dara Morgan, and it's the University of Sussex One World Week's programme as a schedule of events. And it says here, at a time when many university services seem to have been outsourced, I was relieved that the headline for Thursday the 20th read, Solar Eclipse, 8:30 to 10:30 a.m., Library Square, free.
Yes, this is from Rod Begbie from San Francisco. It's about a robbery of a store. The suspect shoplifted a bottle of vodka. When confronted, she brandished a pair of scissors at the store manager and ran outside, where she smashed the bottle on the ground. By brandishing a weapon, scissors, the suspect turned what was a misdemeanour, theft, into a felony robbery. Also, it's not a law, but you're not supposed to run with scissors.
This was in the Sydney Morning Herald. It says this, my friend recently had his prostate removed in a well-known Sydney hospital, reports John Temple of Rose Bay. The advice given in the brochure was to discuss when you can resume sexual intercourse with your consultant.
This one was spotted on the BBC website by everyone. The Premier League has sold television rights to its games for a record £5.136 billion. The Premier League plans to invest £56 million in grassroots projects, including 50 artificial pitches.
Let's take a look at the final score. Helen and Susan have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Miles with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Brighton Argus, sent in by Dan Hatch.
Faye Miller and Adele Wilkinson quit the 9-to-5 rat race to pursue their dream of a career in cake decorating and baking while juggling their young children.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Miles Jupp, Helen Zaltzman and Susan Kalman. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Susan Ray. The chair script was written by Gareth Gwynne, Lucy Clark and Max Davis, with additional material by Gabby Hutchings and Crouch and Liam Byrne. The producer was Lindsay Fenner, and it was a BBC Radio comedy production.
Did you just wink at me?